Next, we are going to be switching over to Miss Marty Blackstock with Parkway Realty Services. She is a real estate professional with 25 years of experience in property management, leasing, marketing, and asset management. She's currently Vice President Asset Manager with Parkway Realty Services, responsible for the operation and financial performance of 14-plus commercial properties, totaling 5.5 million square feet in five submarkets in the Atlanta metropolitan area. This portfolio includes a 2.5 million square foot, four-city block mixed-use asset in downtown Atlanta. Parkway Realty Services is a commercial real estate services and advisory firm that was established in 1983 and currently manages and leases approximately 24 million square feet of office space in 11 states. They are currently affiliated with the Building Owners and Managers Association, also known as BOMA, the Institute of Real Estate Management, Commercial Investment Real Estate Institute, Atlanta Board of Realtors, Central Atlanta Progress, and Metro Atlanta Chamber. Marty holds the designations of CPM, Certified Property Manager, and CCIM, which is Certified Commercial Investment Manager. Welcome to the show, Marty. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you, Joyce. I appreciate the invitation.
All right. I know you're a busy lady, so I'm excited to hear all about what you do with Parkway Realty. So tell us who Parkway is and how does Peachtree Center fit into their portfolio?
Okay. Just a little bit about Parkway, as you mentioned in the introduction. It is a self-administered real estate investment trust, which in our world is a REIT, that we specialize in building operations, leasing, acquisition, disposition, and the ownership of office properties. We currently manage and lease about 24 million square feet across the nation. 33% of that, about 7 million in change, is located here in Atlanta. And then we continue to narrow that down to Peachtree Center, which is about 2.5 million square feet. It covers, like I said, four city blocks. There's 4,000 parking spaces. The current ownership has been in place since 2006. And in 2007, the property dipped to about an occupancy of 60%. And since then, we have brought that up to the high 70s with the goal of getting into the 80s in calendar year 2012. That has come through the tireless work of a leasing staff that has leased for new leases, expansions, and renewals of about 1.7 million square feet in the last 5 years, which is a whole lot of work.
I bet.
So just some other things about Peachtree Center that's downtown. If you're not familiar with the property, it's really the heartbeat of downtown Atlanta. It is the highest concentration of office and retail space in downtown and is really a crossroads for tens of thousands of people on an annual basis. We have 6,000 tenant employees that are at our property, and in addition to the numerous hotel rooms that are around and the conventions that come to town, we do entertain really about a million people on an annual basis. We are a value play in downtown Atlanta as far as office space goes. We have several alternatives that range from as small as 700 square feet to a large block of space for about 100,000 square feet. The nucleus, really, of Peachtree Center is the retail part that kind of sits in the middle. And it becomes an amenity base for not only our tenants, but all of our neighbors and a lot of our competing properties downtown that list the Peachtree Center retail area as their amenity base for their tenants. With 50 retail operations, a lot of those are food services, restaurants, et cetera. And so it becomes quite a gathering space. One of the other things that we are real proud of is we sit, of course, right atop the Peachtree Center MARTA station. And we do have an audience of about 30% of our tenants do utilize alternate transportation, which is really a super strong number in the city of Atlanta. And then, of course, the location, the access and in the egress and ingress, if you will, to downtown is really second to none. I've worked in Buckhead, I've worked in Midtown, I've worked on the perimeter, and the opportunity to work downtown has really proven fruitful. It's quite easy to get to. And there's nothing better than parking your car and being able to walk around downtown for the balance of the day and not have to get into your vehicle until your workday is over. But just a couple of the retail things that we do. We recently started our organic farmers market that we're real excited about. That will start back up in March. We also use our courtyard for a lot of corporate picnics. We have concerts, whether it's jazz, whether it's holiday music, whether it's pop. We do concerts in our courtyard and then also down in the retail area. One of the hot ticket items in downtown is the coupon book. We distribute this to about 40,000 users on an annual basis. And, of course, they can redeem that strictly there at Peachtree Center for the retail tenants. Due to the large convention business that Atlanta brings to downtown, we also have a convention card that we hand out to about 5,000 folks on a monthly basis that they can redeem also at Peachtree Center. And then just literally due to our front and center proximity, we really just become, by default, the stage for many parades that are held in downtown Atlanta. So just a little bit about Parkway and Peachtree.
That's great. Sounds like the hub of Atlanta, that's for sure.
Right, downtown. So are you bullish on downtown?
Absolutely. There's been a lot of regentrification going on in downtown, and, you know, we're really excited to be part of that. And it's one of those things that, you know, several years ago there was kind of a flight, if you will, to other
Midtown,
parts of town.
Right, a lot
to
of people
Midtown.
Left downtown.
And, you know, we kind of have to ask, so how are you enjoying those $30 rental rates?
Right.
Not parking, rental
right.
rates. So yes, I am.
Yeah, so you're bullish. And then do you see the impact of Georgia State University down there affecting what's going on down there?
Absolutely. It's been a very positive impact on downtown, especially from the standpoint of just bringing people to the downtown area to enjoy, you know, the restaurants and the nightlife and the activity instead of having a mass exodus at, you know, 5:30 in the afternoon. It's they're trying to, and they've done a great job about making it a live, work, play environment.
I didn't
students.
Realize they were doing all that down there. I mean, a farmer's market. Concerts?
Yeah,
where have I been?
Well, it's really kind of like you said, it's kind of coming back. It went away for a little bit, but now it's coming back. A lot of activity down there now.
Yeah,
there
absolutely.
Is. It's just going down and giving it a try. A lot of people.
Right. I think a lot of people kind of in their head, they just kind of crossed it off. And then now it's coming back and there's stuff happening there. Every day there's activity down there. It's a really cool place.
Yeah, I liked going to Dragon Con this year.
Yeah,
that
there,
was very
yeah.
interesting.
Well, you guys were right in the heart of that, weren't you?
It is a huge draw. It is actually one of our largest single-day events, even though it is over the Labor Day weekend. But the sales for our retail tenants absolutely are off the charts that weekend, which is good.
And
is
people good. Watching. You
very
can't
much
get
so.
Better than that, right?
That's
very
what I was so. Doing.
You brought your kid?
No, I brought myself, and
just
I'm
you?
A big kid, so I went with my little sister, she's 29, so
right.
she's not that little, but it was fun. Yeah. Then we went to IKEA.
Oh, there you go.
So it was a good day. It was a lot of fun. So what are some no-cost, low-cost green initiatives real estate owners and managers can implement that will make a difference? Because you know we're kind of all about sustainability on
yeah.
inside the winner's circle.
There you go. Well, a lot of people have the mantra, if you will, that a lot of times they go out and engage a third party to commission their equipment, which means bringing someone in to take a look at it and to tweak it according to what it was meant for. However, if you're going to go low cost or no cost, start with your in-house staff. I mean, you've hired these people, you've trained them. They are definitely privy to the operations of the building. So why not start with them? Even though I'm definitely an advocate of consultants and we've used many, from a no-cost perspective, start with the resources that you have. They basically do an inventory of the equipment that you have in the building, and then they take all those set points and work them back to what that piece of equipment was specified to do. And if you can imagine Peachtree Center being developed all the way from the 60s through the 80s, we have an array of equipment. We have some vintage equipment. We have some brand new equipment. But it's been calibrated numerous times over the course of the many years, really 50 years. And so being able to take that and starting everything back to a basis point is very important. You can also look at what time do you start to condition the building in the morning and what time do you turn it off at night. There are ways to optimize that. You don't need to start it at midnight. You can start it at 4 o'clock in the morning or whatever works for your particular tenant environment. But that's a real good place to start. That literally is at no cost. And then the other thing that's becoming quite popular in the Atlanta area is there's a lot of office buildings that operate for a half a day on Saturday. There's typically nobody in the building, so why do you want to engage your systems and use that energy when there's nobody there? So we are already do have some buildings here in Atlanta that have eliminated the Saturday. Now, per our lease agreements, we do have an obligation, and if a tenant does want it, then we will accommodate. So it's really a kind of a courtesy thing. If nobody's going to be there using it, don't turn it on. So those are some real high level, no cost methodologies that people can put in place at no expense.
There you go. No expense is always good.
Yes, that's. And so did you, how do you stay on the forefront of all these kind of free things? How do you learn about them?
Well, being in the market as long as I have, you just have to keep a pulse on what's going on in the industry. You know, in the 90s or late 80s, early 90s, it was all about ADA, American for Disabilities Act, of course. And, of course, we had to redefine our buildings from a physical standpoint so we could make sure that that everyone felt welcome and could readily access the building. And now the sustainability side of it is you do have to set time aside to focus on basically things that are going on in the industry that affect, you know, your real estate portfolio, which mm-hmm. is certainly sustainability.
And are your tenants or potential tenants asking about that?
Some of them are, and that was one of the questions that I had, is even though a lot of tenants ask about it and we cannot ignore it from a marketing standpoint,
right.
I do not believe that a lot of people have seen the needle move materially on increase of rental rates.
Mm-hmm.
People want you to do the right thing,
sure.
of course, and until such time the smaller tenants buy into the benefits of sustainability, right now we're looking at majority of what we do is really a landlord expense.
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing any type of recycling within the buildings?
That is actually my next response that I was going to give you, Joyce, is the cost-conscious things that we can do really tie into the former question. But for those of us that are in the management industry, we partner with a huge number of vendors. And so it's engaging your vendors to work as a partnership and to achieve the goals together. And recycling is likely the largest single sustainability practice that 100% of buildings should be participating in. There is just no reason not to do that. And to kind of give you I like to do a visual relationship, these are just the numbers at Peachtree Center. And a lot of times when you talk about pounds or tons or those type of things, a lot of people glaze over because we don't really have a basis of measurement. And so, in speaking of just of Peachtree, this is on an annual basis. Cardboard alone, we process 360 pounds of cardboard. How much is that? That's 45 elephants. This may sound corny, but it'll leave you with a visual.
Mm-hmm.
Wet trash, which is typically what comes from your restaurants and your cafeterias, we recycle right at 3 million pounds, which is about 350 elephants. Then when you get to your normal daily trash, that is your dry goods that come out of your tenants, paper and whatnot, it's about 700,000 pounds, and that's about 100 elephants. So from a recycling, whether it's wet or dry trash or cardboard, Peachtree Center, we ship out about 500 elephants a year. And so that kind of gives you an indication of
that's 10 a week. That's over one a day.
It's a lot. So not that we have a circus going on down there.
Sometimes but, you do, right? The circus does come to town.
Sometimes we do. And of course, we appreciate our participation with our vendors on that. Another side of that is janitorial. A lot of people are using green products. We have used green products, as most buildings have, for many, many, many years. But the price points have come down, as you have probably seen when you go to Target to buy green products for your home. And I will tell you, the quality has come up. So it's become really mainstream. And if you're not using green cleaning products in your building, then I strongly encourage that you do. And it's just not the inside of the building, but the outside of the building as well. Of course, everybody, you know, has their windows washed at these commercial office buildings. And make sure that your vendors are using what they call gray water, which means it's been used a couple of times, versus having your hose running for, you know, 48 hours and cleaning the buildings. So
that doesn't mess up the exterior?
Not when you use it with the right products.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's great.
I wouldn't want that job.
No. It's a big building.
They are big. A lot of big buildings in town.
There you go. Well, I like that elephant.
You can picture that.
Image, yes. I definitely can see an elephant coming out of a peach tree every day.
Yeah, that'll be the takeaway from this interview. We'll be the elephants.
The March of the Elephants. So those are some of the projects that y'all have planned, both locally. What about nationally? You're a big company.
Nationally, we are big. And when you look at the projects, the one thing that you need to do before you do any type of sustainability project or really any capital project is you need to understand what the goals and objectives of the owner are. Did they buy the property to have a long-term hold? What's the available capital that you might have? What's their exit strategy? Are they going to be out of it in 5 years? And then really, what's the green appetite of the owner? Because I will tell you, they all different. Some of them are huge sustainability flag bearers, and others are, you know, maybe not be as quite as interested in it. Then the things you have to ask yourself are, is the project that you're getting ready to do just sustainable, or is it going to reduce my cost as well? So there's an offset there. And then from a tenant standpoint is, not only do you want to have things that are low cost, you also want them to have an extremely high impact, and where possible, make it visual. As we all know, visual is just makes it more tangible for your tenants. I encourage everybody to, you know, jump on Energy Star and benchmark your building. It really is a basis point from which to start to see where you need to go. And without that, knowing what your destination or your goal is, being able to put a roadmap to that is difficult. So some of the big projects that we have done, just a couple of highlights, lighting retrofits are bar none, probably your number one expense, or the most prolific project that's been done, mainly because there's such a minimal payback. You do the lighting retrofit, and then it pays itself back in, you know, less than 2 years. And that's typically within a time frame that an owner can tolerate. Then you can look at the water conservation you can do, which I would suggest starting in the restrooms in office buildings, from your hand faucets to using low-flow toilets to using low-flow urinals. And we have done that at Peachtree. And one tower in specific, the water consumption went down about 40%.
Wow.
And based on the fact that the City of Atlanta water rates have gone up 27% over the course of the last 4 years, 40% reduction is very substantial.
That is substantial.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Interesting. So what kind of challenges, sustainability-wise, are kind of, what's the difference between an urban property and a suburban property? Because you've overseen all different types, and I'm just curious to see what it's like from the city to the suburbs.
There is all kinds of differences, but I think the two main ones that are probably front and center are landscaping, which you can have prolifically in a suburban environment to the point where it can be a huge expense, or for the likes of Peachtree Center, it's minimal. You know, I hate to say that we are kind of a concrete jungle, but trying to find that green space in a very limited environment that has very harsh growing conditions is a challenge. Whereas in your suburban environment, you've got your wooded areas that, you know, they do a tree count and the trees produce all kinds of oxygen and so on and so forth. So urban areas are going to green roofs. But at the same time, you go back to the question of ownership. Is this a high impact? Is it low cost? And does it make sense for the real estate? So that's something that we're really toying with at the moment, that we haven't crossed that bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And then from an urban environment, the number one thing that's really easy for us to handle in that environment is the alternative transportation that I had mentioned earlier. In your suburban environments, you do get some carpooling, and you'll have some electronic chargers for hybrid cars, that type of thing. But in a downtown environment where you do have rail, Several of our tenants are in the transit business. And, of course, we've got the Cobb County, the Gwinnett, et cetera, that service downtown. And so the alternative transportation measures in an urban environment are very easily achievable.
Mm-hmm.
And Atlanta's pretty good about that.
Is there any type of reward system in place for, do you know, with some of your tenants to encourage their employees to jump on the MARTA and come in?
Well, you know, you kind of look at it as a rewards thing. There are a lot of tenants that do pay for their employees' parking. And a lot of times the offer is, would you rather us pay for your MARTA pass, or would you rather have a parking spot? And a good bit of them do opt for the alternative transportation method, which as a company then really kind of sets them apart as being on a sustainable track.
If I could do that, I would.
I know. And especially there, it just drops you off in the building. Like there's no walking,
right,
like if it's
no
raining,
hassle.
Right, it's like you're right there. I mean, that's one of the big gripes of mass transit is you got to, once you get off, you still got to walk. And if it's raining or cold.
Or you're wearing heels,
exactly.
That's not so fun.
Not so fun.
And sneakers just don't look well.
At Peachtree Center, it's you're right there.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
That's the
big draw.
Yeah. And that's one of the few places in town that where that happens like that, right? Where you're actually dropped right inside of the building.
It actually is down on Peachtree, and then when you come up, you're right, you're standing right in the courtyard. So,
right.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's, the answer to that would be yes.
Yeah, that's a unique thing in that.
That'd be nice to be able to read and relax and not
show up,
road
boom.
Rage.
Exactly.
Not that I ever do that.
Not you. You have a convertible.
That's right. It's always
life
a sunny, happy place in my car. So what are some methods that are being used to gain tenant participation in green programs?
Well, the communication is critical, and, you know, we do all kinds of things, whether it's email engagement, whether it's lunch and learns, whether it's, you know, displays in your lobby. But it goes back to, until such time you boil down the participation to something that's very tangible to them, it's kind of hard to get their arms around. Everybody thinks it's great. But where it really comes to bear is, unfortunately, if and when you ever lose a tenant and they go to another building and they don't have that,
mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden it becomes, well, gosh, this was kind of commonplace at our other facility, and then all of a sudden
they took it for granted.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. So it's just like anything. It's constant communication
mm-hmm.
in various forms. And, you know, whether it's through technology or through just good old face-to-face, sometimes can be very effective as well.
Mm-hmm. So it's all about education.
Correct.
And mm-hmm. embracing that. And kind
right. Do you get ideas from the tenants? Yeah, they ever submit, like, hey, like, how did that organic farmers market bubble up? Was that something?
It actually, they have a farmers market in Rockefeller Center in New York City.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it really just brings people down out of the office buildings to get some fresh air, to do something that's a little bit different, and, you know, maybe grab and go with some produce, et cetera, for, you know, their evening meal. So it
right.
gives just a little bit, it adds to the environment.
It does. That's mm-hmm. awesome to go mm-hmm. down there and get it, you know, that's as fresh as you can get food. So
that's
is it popular?
It is. It got real cold on us, believe it or not. We can't say that for the month of January, but December got to the point where folks were staying inside.
Right.
And, you know, in respect of our vendor, it is a seasonal.
Sure.
I mean, any
right.
farmer's market
yeah,
is going
I'm sure
to be a seasonal.
In the spring and the summer it'll be packed.
Yeah, we're going to start it back up in early March.
Right. Oh, that's cool.
Is it every day or like once a quarter?
It is
or?
Every Thursday. That's one thing about tenant education is you've got to be consistent with what you do
mm-hmm.
Because the minute they get used to it and you pull it, then it's
like,
difficult,
where'd that go?
Difficult right. to reignite that
yeah.
fire.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. Kind of get the momentum going.
Right, and they know they can count on it every Thursday they go
That's
there
right.
they plan for it.
That's right.
Capri salad
exactly.
right up for
That's
dinner.
As fresh as it can be. I love farmers markets.
It's been a while since I've been to one.
Well, because it's winter. They don't come back until March.
Well, I didn't make it last March either, but that's okay. Maybe this year will be
you
the
will.
Year.
You will. I promise.
Okay,
you will
good.
Be there.
I'll have you take me.
Absolutely.
So has the sustainability craze resulted in increased construction costs, rental rates, or building values?
Well, let's start first of all with development side. We are not in the development business per se. Parkway is not. But in speaking with colleagues in Atlanta that are, 10 years ago when the U.S. Green Building Council introduced the LEED certification, it'll be 10 years old this year, kind of hard to believe. They still feel that if you have a trophy building, whether it's a headquarter facility in the Silicon Valley or some trophy building, there is a little bit of a premium on the green construction side of things. But just like anything else, it's a program that's entered the market. It's been around for 10 years. LEED APs, which are LEED professionals, are much more prevalent. Owners and consultants have become much more experienced. The price of sustainable products has come down somewhat. So unless it's really a trophy property, from a development standpoint, a green building coming out of the ground should be able to be done at typical construction costs.
Mm-hmm.
So back to my comment of when ADA came out in the early 90s and took the market by storm, that's very commonplace now. And sustainability, I believe, will be very commonplace just with some time.
Mm-hmm.
From a rental rate perspective, as I had mentioned before, until such time tenants embrace the state's sustainability, it really is a landlord cost. There's large national global companies out there that are prolifically sustainable, many of which are Parkway tenants in our buildings, and they understand that. Are they willing to pay a premium? Not quite yet. Not quite yet. However, from a marketing perspective, it is a seal of approval. And when leasing brokers are taking around prospective tenants and they see that we're Energy Star labeled or we're LEED certified at whatever, you know, gold, silver, platinum, et cetera, silver, gold, platinum, it really is a seal of approval. We've all gotten used to all of our appliances at home being Energy Star. That's just commonplace. And so now that's being overlaid into a much larger picture in commercial real estate buildings. From a building value, does it add value to my building? Right now, it really comes from reducing operating expenses, which, of course, have an effect on your net operating income. At the same time, could be offsetting some lower income than you would prefer. And being able to show that consecutive efficiency of what you've put into place is continuing year after year is very valuable. Appraisers in the marketplace have indicated that your property value can go up between 2-8%, which on a large building is really just a rounding error. On a smaller building, it could be a sizable number.
Mm-hmm.
But really, where we're at right now in the marketplace, the greater consequence is doing nothing. Because mm-hmm. as the buildings become older and you get into obsolescence of the equipment, that is certainly not helping your value at all. So a little bit of a value tweak there in what you do, but it needs to be consistent and proven over a period of time. But doing nothing will definitely erode away the value of your building.
Makes sense. Got to keep things current.
As
keep
best
innovating.
You can. Yeah, you got to invest in the property.
Yes, you do.
And it'll give you maybe that extra edge with the curb appeal, mm-hmm. so to speak. Mm-hmm. If a tenant is shopping around, they see that you're environmentally friendly and another building's not, it'll give you maybe a little leg up.
Right.
It's certainly a marketing. There's marketing value there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But it's interesting how you have to balance the reality of the economics of renting a building.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always there.
Well, especially buildings of that size.
It's a big job.
A big job.
Well, they have the right person in it.
Well.
So what do you think the future holds for innovative sustainability?
There's a lot of really fun projects out there, some of which Parkway is in the process of doing, some that I have seen at some other properties in town that Parkway does not own. And so even while they're out there as future, they are being played with a little bit right now. One is off-site composting, is where you actually take the food waste itself, and you turn it into organic waste, and then it goes into products versus just sending the your wet trash to the landfill. Of course, the EV chargers, which are the chargers that are in parking decks that people can plug their vehicles into, we have a property that we have that undergoing currently. Another one is rainwater harvesting. If you can imagine, whenever you have acreage and you cover that up with asphalt, you have to have a retention pond. It's kind of similar to that in a commercial office building, is when you have a concrete deck, when it rains, the amount of water that comes off that deck is incredible, and it goes into rain barrels that you then turn around and turn into irrigation. Now, that said, it's very innovative, but the payback right now, from what I have seen, is well in excess of 10 to 15 years, and owners, unless they are thinking that it's just the right thing to do and they want to have that little edge, it's slow in coming. And then, of course, solar, especially in an urban environment. Keep in mind, you have to have thousands of panels to make a difference. We do have a property that is undergoing a little bit of solar just to accommodate some charging of some vehicles. So those are some exciting things that are always fun to do. But once again, do they make sense for the real estate asset?
Got it. Well, gosh, you are full of some good information.
I guess solar would have its challenges. If you're not the tallest building, then aren't you shaded by lots of buildings around you? Does that impact that?
That definitely would come in as a factor where you have you'd have to do a shadow study.
Right.
A shadow study.
You didn't even know there was a shadow study.
I did not. I did not know. And there's some consultant out there somewhere that can do that
for you.
He coined
that phrase, shadow study expert.
That's funny. Well, Marty, I always like to get to know kind of the person behind the business. And I wanted to ask you about what your X factor is. Clearly, you're highly educated and experienced in running big business and big buildings. But what is it? What's your X factor? What do you bring that's uniquely you?
The number one thing that comes to my mind is I'm very passionate about what I do. And that just comes with... Fortunately, I picked an industry where my skill set and strengths overlay really without a lot of effort. Mm-hmm. And so I encourage folks that if you don't love what you're currently doing, then find out what it is that you love to do and go pursue that. I can truthfully say that I love getting up and going to work. And I mean, I've been doing it for 25 years, and it just, it matches my personality and my skill set. Mm-hmm. So I've been very fortunate in that. The other thing is just the number of years in the business. I have learned by many mistakes, and the thing is when you do make a mistake, you've got to learn from it. If you elect not to, then so be it. But I think just years in the business from hands-on experience and then learning by your mistakes. And then I'm told, anyway, it's just the financial understanding that I have of an asset. Mm-hmm. And I encourage managers out there to do that versus just, collecting rent and getting the landscape taken care of and having the building cleaned. There is a set of books that goes with that building. And mm-hmm. while it can be overwhelming at times, it's nothing different than, if you will, your own personal checkbook. Got to have more money coming in than you have going out. It's really just, basic 101 math. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
There you go. So you recommend that other property managers get comfortable with the numbers and mm-hmm. with their accounting and... So you clearly have a grasp on that. So
I teach a real estate investment and finance course for building owners and managers here in Atlanta and have done it for, 9-10 years. And it's a very entry-level class that helps to grasp net present values, internal rate of returns, and what they can do as an individual property manager to set themselves apart and adding value to the building. Mm-hmm. Because it just doesn't come through more income a mm-hmm. lot of the times, especially in the economy in the last 3 or 4 years. It's come through reduction of expenses. Mm-hmm. And that's management.
That's right. Operations.
That's right. Good advice.
Where do you teach your class?
It is at Building Owners and Managers, which is over off of Claremont Road and in 85. It's a class that's required for the designation RPA, Real Property Administrator.
Gotcha. That'd be a good course for anybody involved at mm-hmm. any level. Well, what about just a landlord, somebody that...
Oh, absolutely. I have I had a fellow in there that was really a day porter, and he did fantastic, but he wanted to know the side of the business of the building in which he was working. And so there's, you know, and then there's high-level property managers, and they come from various backgrounds.
Gotcha. So accounting is the language of business, everybody. You must learn it.
You better pay attention to the numbers.
There you go. If you're going to only learn one second language, I would recommend it be that one.
Accounting. There you go.
So my final question to you is, what advice do you have to others that want to become as successful as you?
Well, never place yourself above getting in the trenches of getting the job done. And whether I need to spend a day with a day porter and find out what they do all day to possibly make their role more efficient or have more efficient use of their time, or if it's, you know, visiting with a CEO regarding whatever issue has come up, is never place yourself above, you know, the hard work. One story that I relate back to, I was literally about 8 3/4 months pregnant with my second child, and I had entered a building competition, and I told my team that we didn't enter this to lose. We entered this competition to win. And I think when it finally hit home to them is when they saw me on the lobby at 8 3/4 months pregnant with a toothbrush scrubbing the floors, and we won. We won. So it takes hard work. And I think Undercover Boss is a great reality show. And when they interview those folks after they have gone out into the field to see what really gets done, you know, not from the bottom to the top or top to the bottom, but what we do as a team, I don't think any of them would give away that experience and being able to do that.
It's an eye-opener.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the harder you work, the luckier you get, right?
Yeah. And then another thing would be learn something every day. I mean, none of us, I think Cindy brought it home as you did in continuing your education, Joyce, is learn something new every day. It could be a new word. It could be, you know, some accounting practice, whatever it is. Just don't ever stop that. Mm-hmm. My mother will be 82 this week, and she is now teaching her third generation of children and still is a substitute teacher 3 days a week. So just never give up on that. And then the final thing would be just be patient. I've been doing this for 25 years. It didn't happen the first couple of years. And I think being patient because success is not a get-rich-quick proposition. Mm-hmm. It takes time.
One day at a time, really. It's like that's where it gets hard, is in the common day. You know, you can have your goals and your sights set, but it's in the patience, the day-to-day work that has to be done that sometimes people lose heart a little too soon. They do.
And, you know, it's, you know, and generations change. You know, if anybody can encourage the younger audience is, you know, don't give up too quickly. I know that being at a corporation for 35 years for your whole life may be gone, but, you know, changing positions every 18 months to 2 years is probably not real beneficial. Just give it some time to work and be patient.
It's like the bamboo tree takes like 8 years. It'll just sit there like nothing happening, and then all of a sudden it grows 80 feet in 1 year.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is amazing. Concentrated power right there. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been so interesting hearing all that you are involved with and how large buildings manage to be environmentally friendly and continue to make profits. So we appreciate you sharing with us.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me. Thanks so much.
It's been a pleasure.